So let's see. Roger talked about one way that, in a way, magnetic fields act as an intermediary between gravity and radiation, namely as kind of a drive belt between the rotation of the hole and dissipation at large radii, perhaps. Another way of getting energy out of magnetic fields is to really dissipate them catastrophically in large field gradients. That's the subject of magnetic reconnection and magnetic dissipation. I'm going to talk a bit about that. If you were here for the previous talk that I gave, it was on dynamo theory, which is sort of the amplification of magnetic fields. How do they grow in the first place? And reconnection is kind of, once you've got them, a way of getting rid of them. In a sense, these two are balanced, perhaps in turbulence. It's sort of an example where they can balance. You have a steady amplification, but then you also have dissipation. So both ends of the problem, the growth and destruction of magnetic fields, are fundamental to various problems. The particular subject of reconnection involves both dissipation and a magnetic topology change. So it's relevant when both of those things are present. And this process is of magnetic reconnection, which I'm going to describe in, of course, more detail. It goes on in the lab. It goes on in planetary magnetosphere interaction of the solar wind with the Earth's magnetic field. And Ferd Cornidi has done a lot of work in the microphysics of this. He's a great expert, so his input would be welcome. Solar flares and corona of AGN and jets are places where it's possibly also going on, relevant to the subject of our meeting here. So since the process is going on in lots of different environments, in general, to try to sort of set up the big picture of what is required just in the process of magnetic reconnection, there seems to be rapid flare energy release in a variety of magnetized environments. And the speed at which you need to dissipate, if you have magnetized flow, and the speed at which you need to get rid of this magnetic energy and dump it into particles, seems to be a sizable fraction of the Alfvén speed in variety in most places where reconnection is occurring. The sun, geomagnetic tail, and even in applications to AGN. So that seems to be the rate. Rapid rate seems to be a generic feature. How the energy dissipates into what kind of particles, into what fraction of the magnetic energy goes into flow, is not as generic. It differs in different environments and in different events in the same environment. So, in general, I would say that sort of the subject of reconnection is one of how can you generate a rapid rate of reconnection, but with a variety of particle acceleration possibilities that depend perhaps on boundary conditions or various parameters of the particular environment. Now, just to motivate this a bit more, this is a nice solar flare you can see here. If I were a comet person, I would say ignore the solar flare and look at the comet. But so that's a picture of a solar flare. You can see that's an example. I will show the sort of, if you just keep that picture in mind.
It's not very stationary, it's actually
symmetric. Exactly.
What do we see
there? Well, okay. What you right. This is a comet, actually. This is I'll show a schematic of what this is. This is a presumed loop of magnetic field, which is undergone reconnection. Perhaps the reconnection is somewhat up here. It shoots particles down to the base of the corona, and those high energy particles interact with the photosphere here and produce this kind of loop, the soft X-ray loop. So upon the upwelling, so in fact, actually, this sort of loop structure is likely the actual X point for the reconnection, which I will show, has gone up here, and this is the back upwelling of particles, of the effect of particles which hit the photosphere. Now, just again to talk about solar flares, because they are a motivating a physical regime for this. Basically, two types of solar flares in the massive amounts of literature, there's long duration of M solar flares. And I'm going to show this inverse Y configuration for what this geometry is involving reconnection in a moment. But compact impulsive flares are also observed. These last minutes. The long duration events are hours. The compact impulsive flares are minutes. They both occur rapidly of order 0.1 VA, but the compact impulsive flares have a lot of non-thermal electrons associated with the outflow. Perhaps 50% or so of luminosity can actually come out in super in electrons above 20 keV, whereas the long duration events don't seem to show that. And there have been some controversy as to what mechanisms can explain these different. Are these the same framework for these two types of flares? It seems that in 1994 there's a Nature paper by Masuda, Yoko X-ray observations, which suggest that the same basic paradigm of reconnection and the geometry may be at work in both of these types of flares, unifying sort of the picture. In a nice paper, Suneda interprets the picture I'm about to show, this inverse Y mechanism for this long duration event flare. And one can argue, and so sort of hopefully in the big picture, perhaps one can argue that the basic geometry of the reconnection going on in solar flare may be similar, but that various parameters in the region and boundary conditions may determine some of the differences you see between these apparently two different classes of flares. Well, because the signature of the for example, if the magnetic field is just sort of moving around in material, it's not going to release any energy catastrophically. So this question is related to a bit of the physical process of reconnection, which I'll describe in a moment. But the magnetic energy, when you move the magnetic field around, it isn't releasing its energy catastrophically. If you develop large field gradients, then you can destroy this mega energy very rapidly, and the outburst of that will show up in something like X-rays or something like that. So the signature of reconnection largely is a burst of energy that comes out. It's not always, it's a hindsight kind of thing. You say, we know the system is magnetized, we see these bursts of energy. We know that if we have large field gradients, we can get rid of this energy. It's not actually, in many of these objects, it's not actually...
What's reconnected in the field?
Let me sort of get to this. If you hold on to the question, I'll keep it in my mind and sort of show, perhaps I'll answer it as I discuss the physics a bit more. So, this picture of a solar flare, so if you imagine here is the surface of the sun, here's a loop. This is the inverse Y paradigm for how that, this is this picture here, you can see the, and this soft X-ray loop is the loop that is the surface of the sun. So the idea is that you have magnetic field lines.
Why is it Y and not X?
Because the Y is, it's like if you imagine standing.
It depends. Yeah, but it came on a larger scale.
That's true. Yeah, but there's a beginning of the X.
It's just a question of bystander matter.
I think it's the X is here, and then the Y is.
Yeah, okay.
So, in other words, you sort of see it, the X point is, well, the Y is comes out because it's this thing that you actually see. It's this soft X-ray loop. The dynamics is actually going on in the X point. So it's a statement of an observational, rather than a theoretical. So the idea is that you have magnetic field of one pointing one direction, field lines that are directed one way here, and field lines that are directed the other way here, and they come together by instability or by driving. But in this case, you can derive conditions under which oppositely magnetized field lines tend to merge, and they merge over a very small region. At this region, there's no magnetic energy. The magnetic energy has been dissipated. The flow which is coming in is getting squeezed out now by the magnetic pressure, upwards and downwards. And there's various heating and acceleration mechanisms that are going on here, which I'll describe. But basically, magnetic energy is coming in. The inflows are magnetically dominated. The magnetic energy is dissipated both in this box and across shocks. The outflow, the energy gets converted to flow and to particles, which are accelerated in various places in this outflow. And the particles, which actually are heated along these shocks, go down to the photosphere, and they create this soft X-ray loop from interaction with the photosphere. I'm going to keep this picture up back again.
What's happening in the third dimension?
Okay, in the third dimension, this is a two-dimensional projection, but the third dimension, you can imagine that there's some field that isn't involved in the topological reversal. So that there's, in other words, in the two dimensions, in the third dimension could be a field that's pointing at some angle all the way across this direction. And the reconnection is happening between the components of the field which reverse in a particular plane.
And the little box.
And the box is, well, yeah, so the box, so...
How far is it extending the third direction?
Oh, it's not clear. I mean, I mean, in theoretical models, often it's assumed infinitely. It's assumed as two-dimensional models. But it's not exactly clear. I mean, this picture, I just want to highlight something. I'm going to come back to this picture again because it sort of has a summary of everything that's going on. There's a lot of physics takes place in this region, which determines essentially how fast these magnetized flows can merge. There's various plasma processes that go on in this region which affect the resistivity, et cetera, sort of discuss in a minute. There's the possibility of shocks in the outflow. Fast shocks in the outflow, slow shocks bordering the inflow and outflow. So you can see that reconnection is sort of an environment, I would say, rather than it's sort of an environment with several different processes going on with respect to particle acceleration, rather than just a single physical process. No, actually, this picture is the result of both, well, calculations and matching to observations. I'll talk about
the 3D model.
Well, no, there are simulations, et cetera. Yeah, 3D. More or less. Yeah. I should also say that this paper by Tsuneda, which really interprets the observations of Yoko, it's a masterpiece of astrophysical phenomenology. I mean, it really shows good evidence that in the solar flare there seems to be this type of configuration. Now, if you just flip this aside for the moment, I'm going to start talking about the... Well, let me...
Will you be coming back to it? Because I don't know about this.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to this. I'm going to pass to this. Perhaps it's going to settle in a little bit. Let me just point out one more motivation before really getting into the physics. So the corona, Roger also briefly mentioned this, the corona of the sun, of course, is a site where this kind of reconnection model is going on, which I will again explain in more detail. But the corona of active galactic nuclei is another place, particularly in Seyfert 1s. The paradigm is that you have an accretion disk and an X-ray corona. And there seems to be evidence that the X-ray corona is marginally optically thin, produces a direct source of X-rays, which both we see directly and also get reprocessed on the disk. And because magnetic fields are likely involved in the viscous angular momentum transport in the disk, it's not unreasonable that some of them could perhaps become buoyant, something like in the sun, and dissipate their energy. in a reconnection event, much like on the sun. So the direct X-ray source in a good paradigm for the direct X-ray source in Seyfert 1 is perhaps reconnection in the corona of AGN, or perhaps farther inside the central engine. But magnetic fields are very likely involved. It's Bremsstrahlung, thermal Bremsstrahlung. Although there's evidence, although there's non-thermal electrons also, yeah, and that depends to some extent on the particular flare. The compact impulsive flare seems to have more non-thermal electrons. So, in the AGN corona. As I mentioned, the buoyancy, magnetic fields, since they have no mass, they can become buoyant. One of the ways that they can get up to the corona is just they simply rise by buoyancy. And we know these disks are turbulent, so there may be some question about how buoyant the magnetic fields can be if they're constantly being sheared and broken up by the turbulence in the disk. But anyway, there's sort of a picture of what you might expect to be going on to produce an X-ray in an accretion disk in AGN. Okay. And of course, here's a Maxim picture of an accretion disk.
How is the solar corona heated? Is it lots of small scale connections
I mean, I'm not an expert in that. I would say that both the reconnection possibilities or just Alfvén wave dissipation. I don't know which one would be the. Maybe someone else would have an idea of which one would be the.
Party line third on that.
Well, I think. Roger Ulrich has managed to measure the Alfvén flux, the Alfvén drifting, so the chromes are going up.
Yeah.
And it's marginally able to supply power to the heat of chromes. But whether that is the only mechanism or the dominant mechanism for the heat sources, and other people are still talking about the magnetic reconnection of various kinds, not necessarily of the neutral line on the grid. I think that's also very important.
That was the story I heard more in England, that it was reconnection from the
spirit. Yeah,
what was the spoke of the word?
Cheering, reconnection, yeah, that's.
So in fact, if you just naively make a plot of numbers of flares versus energy release, does it look like a divergence at the high end or the low end?
I think at the high end, I think that's right.
It's a large energy release.
I think the two types of flares. I would think that you're saying the number of flares is a function of high energy. I think they diverge at the high end. Yeah. But it may be selective.
Small flares dominated the energy release.
Overall. Oh, okay.
Yeah, in terms of the spectrum, observation there. But I don't know.
I think if you take the long duration event flares, which are slightly less luminous than the compact impulsive flares, I think there are more. I'm going to come back to the inverse Y picture, and I'm going to start now just sort of the basic concepts of what really is going on in the physics here. So, magnetic field we know has tension and pressure. In most of astrophysics, the magnetic field line is linked to the fluid. That is, if you push the fluid around, the magnetic field goes with it. And that's a statement that comes from Maxwell's equations plus an Ohm's law, which involves just a simple resistivity here. You get the induction equation. The statement that the magnetic field is frozen into the plasma is just the ratio. It's a statement that the ratio of the convective term in the evolution of the magnetic field is generally much larger than the resistive term. But you can see that you can violate this And when this flux freezing holds, you're not dissipating magnetic energy. The magnetic field just responds to the fluid motions. It can be amplified by the fluid motions, etc. To get rid of the magnetic field, you can see that you want to make this term large in some way, and you can either do that with an enhanced resistivity or with a very small scale field gradients. And so that's sort of the initiation point for the subject of this magnetic reconnection. So magnetic reconnection is, in a sense, the geometry of field lines, a situation where you get very small field gradients. So it is indeed a place where the flux freezing is violated. It can either be driven. You have magnetic fields, for example, of a planet, and have a wind coming in with an opposite magnetic field. The reconnection is driven, or it can be spontaneous, depending on the equilibrium conditions of the magnetic field. You can show, under certain arrangements, the thing is going to spontaneously tend to reconnect. So there are two issues: the rate of this process and the and how you can get the energy out. One of the earliest models of reconnection is called Sweet-Parker reconnection. The idea here is simply that you imagine this thickness here to be this region of large field gradients. It's also a current sheet, because large J is curl of B, and so a large field gradient means a large current. And magnetic field comes in from both sides and squeezes out along this current sheet. You can ask how long, in a steady state, you can say, how fast can I feed magnetic field in such that the dissipation chomps it up at a steady thickness? And when you do that, just eta is the magnetic viscosity associated with the dissipation. You get an inflow rate, which is this. The mass continuity, all of the mass that comes in here gets squeezed out here. So just from mass continuity, you get this equation. And basically, you get an inflow rate over the Alphain speed. Since the thing is magnetically dominated here, the available energy is magnetic. So the outflow velocity is of order the Alphain speed. And basically, this is the ratio. The inflow speed is going to be down from the Alphain speed by a factor of 1 over the magnetic Reynolds number associated with that Alphain velocity. This is a huge number in astrophysics generally, and it's this rate that you get from this simple mechanism was too slow to explain the rate that you need in the Sun and certainly in other systems by orders of magnitude. So something more.
This flow is unstable.
You mean to?
Certainly, numerical simulations have shown that these degenerate from the turbine.
The turbulent issue. I mean, this current sheet becomes turbulent, etc., and that enhances the rate by some factor. There's an issue of, and the turbulence that we're talking about there is plasma turbulence. That is, if this inflow is laminar. The scale of the dissipation sheet is going to be of order of gyro radii. So the processes which are going on in this region are going to be plasma processes. But let me move.
Even in ideal MHC,
you get a tearing mode instability also, yeah.
Because of some recent suggestions, Vishnu
and Bergeron. I'm going to discuss that in a moment, yeah. Which is, right. MHD turbulent reconnection in MHD turbulent environment. I have some questions and concerns about that, but we can discuss that. Yeah. So, the next step, kind of to try to enhance the rate, is you'll notice for one thing that also in the formula for the rate, the inflow of our alpha velocity is equal to the thickness of this current sheet over the typical field gradient length coming into the region. And So that relationship basically also holds here, but you can see that in this picture, the ratio of the actual dissipation region to the let me describe what's going on. Magnetic field here coming in and going out, just like in the other picture, only now the region of actual field annihilation is taking place over a scale which is much smaller than the overall field gradient length of the inflowing region. And as a result, you have shocks which match the inflow and outflow. And the geometry of this field line here, this really is a reconnection in the sense that there is a topological change in the field line. In the other picture, it is more of a dissipation over the region that's of interest. So one might say, really, one doesn't see the effect of the topology change in the Sweet-Parker dissipation rate, although it may weigh out here. But in the Petrick picture, one really does see this topology change. And its effect is that there's a tension associated with the magnetic field. And this has the effect, more or less, of increasing the outflow and thus thrusting the plasma out sort of for a given alphane speed at a rate which is faster, so that the inflow of material that can be accommodated is greater. So the and if you go through the calculation, particularly you have to match the jump conditions across this shock to the inflow through the dissipation region, you get something like a log of the Reynolds number dependence on the inflow. This number is, actually it shouldn't be a half there, but this number is reasonable. So this would give you something like a tenth of the alphane speed, which is something like what you need.
The output of
the Yeah, more or less. I should mention that in the textbooks, it's assumed that this is often incompressible, which is actually wrong. You really have to go through and solve the jump conditions for compressible. These shocks are compressible. So in Parker's book, for example, you won't see a discussion of the fact that these shocks are actually compressible. And that has some implications for particle acceleration, I think, in the environments in which this is occurring. But let me move on.
I have a stupid question. What is incompressible shock?
Well, it isn't really, it isn't a shock. It's a wave, yeah. It was exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... So, just going on the rate a bit more, there are two ways to enhance the rate. You can change this geometry, as I sort of mentioned, increasing... the way that I discussed was decreasing the width means shocks. The other way is increasing the thickness, since the inflow is over the outflow is a portion of the thickness over the width, and that comes from enhancing the resistivity. So increasing D means enhancing resistivity, and decreasing W means shocks in the flow, essentially. Now, the Petrick thing has been controversial. Whether it actually occurs at this fast rate has been challenged. Some simulations don't seem to show that. Forbes and Priest claim, perhaps convincingly, that the boundary conditions are very important in determining what kind of current sheet you get. In particular, they find that is what kind of current sheet you get if you keep the resistivity fixed over the whole region. They claim that they can get this Petrick reconnection over when the resistivity is the same over the whole region by adding a bit of convergence to the inflow. And when they don't add this convergence, they get the Sweet-Parker. Now, it's also true, that at the X point, there are likely plasma processes which enhance the resistivity. If the outflow region remains laminar from the MHD point of view, the width of this current sheet is determined largely by plasma processes, that is, processes below the particle gyro radius scale. And the turbulence, perhaps, in those processes can enhance this this thickness, and there's ways to enhance the rate of reconnection or the resistivity in that region over the ambient. So there is an issue of the role of, so I talk about the role of turbulence in enhancing the reconnection rate.
By the way, about the static, I heard recently that, I forget if it was actually an experiment, that wasn't mentioned to me, or the simulation that actually showed that it happens at the sleep process.
Okay, there's an experiment at Princeton, the MRX experiment, and what they have is Reynolds numbers or Lundquist numbers, which I think are about 300 or something, that is not particularly high. They find that they can model the reconnection rate as so they have like a toroidal arrangement, and they push the things together in a toroidally symmetric way. They claim that the reconnection rate they get is consistent with the sweep Parker. However, since the Lundquist or the magnetic Reynolds number is low, this reconnection rate goes as a square root, so it's a square root of 300 or something, and so it's a bit difficult perhaps to tell whether you, and they also say that the resolution is not good enough to test for the shocks that would be present, and so they say in their paper, which is a PRL, that at the present time their simulation doesn't absolutely can't be used as an argument to fully rule out the Petrec case. I should just
It's an
actual laboratory experiment, yeah.
It's
collisional. The reconnection regions are collisionless. The width of the dissipation here is collisionless. I don't know the actual scale numbers, but I know that it's I think they've got that changed. I mean, I think that the regions over which the dissipation is occurring in a small size relative to their. But let me just point out that I think that you could argue. So this is back to this inverse Y picture. You'll notice the similarity between the Petrec picture, which if you turn like this, and the inverse Y, and in fact these shocks, oh, that's not very good, the rate of this matches the Petrec. If you look at the inflow and outflow conditions, the jump conditions across the shock seems to match Petrec. This from observations. You get sort of hot channels here where the shocks have heated particles. You get an outflow here, which in some cases can cause a downstream shock, and you can calculate what the outflow is based on the inflow, and everything sort of works out with this picture nicely. The fact that this Masuda flare and the Tsuneda interpretation of the long DE flares can also be perhaps applied to the compact composite flares, I think suggests that something like Petrec reconnection really is occurring in solar flares. So, let's see, moving on to the sort of structure, talk a little bit about just enhancing the rate and then some of the particle acceleration stuff. I want to emphasize that there's an issue of MHD versus plasma physics going on. If the inflow is MHD turbulent, so some people have considered, let me see if I... I lost a few graphs, but... Oh, here it is. So the role of turbulence in enhancing the reconnection rate, turbulence here really has two different meanings which need to be distinguished. One is MHD turbulence, that is motion of the plasma on scales larger than the particle gyroradii at least, and plasma turbulence, which is turbulence which goes on below the scale of the gyro radius, more or less. The plasma turbulence, if you imagine that the inflow is laminar, the plasma turbulence, as I said, is surely relevant and affects the microphysical dissipation. But many MHD plasmas in astrophysics are MHD turbulent also. And Lazarian and Vishniak have sort of studied a bit of the role of MHD turbulence on the reconnection rate. What they argue is that if you look at a turbulent medium, this is what is called weak turbulence in the Goldreich-Trihardt sense, which means you have a strong mean field, but you have sort of fluctuations around this mean field. They look at the magnetic field as these lines, which are sort of wandering a little bit because of these turbulent fluctuations. And what they argue is that the reconnection doesn't take place along a uniform line, but it takes place across these little sites. And so each of these sites is connected to some field line that goes someplace else. So by reconnecting many of these sites at the same time, essentially, you can essentially reconnect all of the field lines in this region very rapidly. The idea is that the rate is going as essentially the reconnection of each small scale, the velocities of each small scale, times the number of these small scales that you have reconnecting at any one time. Now, if you calculate this reconnection speed versus the actual cascade time in the turbulence, that is, if you ask how a fluctuation in the turbulence would proceed, say, on this side of the reconnection boundary, just from cascading down to smaller and smaller scales by wave interaction, you get that the reconnection time is of order the cascade time. And so, in a sense, to me, what this sort of suggests is that it's not clear that reconnection in this sense is more important than the concept of turbulent diffusion. The concept of turbulent diffusion is simply that when you stir up when you have a material that's stirred up, or if you have turbulence in the form of waves on these field lines, they're going to cascade down to the small scale on an eddy turnover time of the largest scale, or fluctuation of the largest scale. And if that's happening even without any field reversals in bulk, then it's not really clear that in an MHD turbulent situation that the sort of theory of reconnection has the same role that it would if the two flows here were laminar, because the energy could dissipate on either side here just as fast it would dissipate across the current sheet. Now, the other thing is that in this picture, a very small fraction of the energy is actually released, it seems to me, because their argument is that you reconnect this field line, you only have to reconnect it here, and then it's on its way to the left. You reconnect this one here, and then it's on its way. So if you actually calculate the fractional volume of magnetic energy that's dissipated in this picture, it doesn't seem to be a large fraction of the overall magnetic energy in this scheme. Now,
well, it's possible for most of the work to be done by both forces from the topological
perspective. Oh, yeah. That's true. That's more or less true, but you do need to change most of the energy if you want the bulk forces. If you want to get the energy back in bulk forces, you do have to convert most of the energy in the magnetic field.
There's another kind of problem with the picture, which is that they assume that you get all of the flow very quickly using the same scooting out.
Yeah.
Think about the third dimension of the field.
That's right, yeah.
The field line doesn't want to go to the left,
have
to hook around the right, field line to go to the right. And that
exactly.
Can slow that down.
Yeah, that you could argue, like, so for example, if this field line reconnects here, it's then going to loop around this one, and then as it tries to make its way out, it bangs into this field line, which in fact they would argue, as you told me, that it just would dissipate fast, that could go really quickly. I could imagine that. Some of that effect might help alleviate the problem I mentioned, because instead of having just these reconnection sites, there are these secondary reconnections as this thing tries to push through the field lines. But I want.
I would have referred to the same objection, saying that if you have a certain site and you mount to the next site, the effect of the first site matches prevent the field line to the next site that they are just forgetting, and not even in the third dimension.
So, again, I would just point out that there are two-dimensional
simulations.
Mm.
So they
don't have a component of the field in the other direction. The simulations are not work by discount.
There is a
major topological difference between the two situations, and how does it interchange, and that gives you.
Let me say, this is not. I'm not criticizing the fact that the reconnection rate can't happen at independent of the Reynolds number. I mean, that's what the Petchek effect essentially says, more or less, even without MHD turbulence. So, in other words, if you take Petchek and you just have the inflow laminar and appeal to whatever microphysical resistivity you have, it would do that, and it would do it basically independent of Reynolds number. There are these arguments that somehow if the Petchek thing doesn't work, that somehow MHD turbulence in the inflow would play a role. I think going on more a bit about that point, what confuses me about the role of MHD turbulence in doing anything like this is that it seems that when we talk about reconnection and the resistivity being determined by plasma processes, that's actually the reconnection process that's going on in the very small scale, that's going on the scales here. So in other words, if you have a mean magnetic field in a turbulent flow, this random structure is determined by a turbulent diffusivity, not by a microphysical diffusivity. And it seems to me that it's not clear that when you talk about reconnection of the mean field and turbulent flow, that it's really the same process that we talk about when we talk about the kind of reconnection going on this sort of very small scale. I think that basic turbulent diffusivity, which is the concept of turbulent diffusivity is that if you have a field like this and you average over these small scale fluctuations, you have some mean field. And similar to in dynamo theory, when you average the mean field, you get this turbulent diffusivity which could be of order the turbulent velocity times the turbulent length scale. This is a huge resistivity, much, much greater than the microphysical resistivity. It gives you an effective Reynolds number of order 1, a turbulent Reynolds. I mean, if you take what is the effective Reynolds number for moving around the mean field, it's of order 1. This is a large, very large value. So it just seems to me that when you talk about MHD turbulence, it's not clear to me that the reconnection process is competitive with the cascade of the turbulence to smaller scales by other kinds of eddy or wave damping. So there's issues there which I think have to be thought about.
I was going to say, just one thing that I think Lazarian and Vishniak want to say is, even if you don't get this turbulent cascade to very small scales because of the cascade damping you're referring to, they just want to widen their reconnection thickness. Mm. By filling to field line 1, which can be a process that
can occur
in larger scale fluctuations.
Yeah, okay.
If their picture does work, they don't actually need to get the cascade, the sort of the spectrum of
okay. I guess the point is that one might argue that the rate at which reconnection happens, even in that picture, is no faster I mean, one has to calculate sort of what's the rate of reconnection for a given fluctuation compared to its just cascade time to smaller scales. And it may be, generically, that the cascade time to smaller scales is faster than, or as fast as the tendency for the field line to reconnect anyway. But I think, so just as a general theme, I think that the issue of plasma, I mean, I think it's sort of important to distinguish between the role of NHD here and the role of plasma stuff. I mean, it's sometimes when you're reading reconnection stuff, it's not clear what people are actually talking about. I think, so...
What's actually driving the surface on a large scale?
Well, in which case? The
in
this picture here. So, well, in this picture, so this would be the... Okay, well, let me say one thing. I would say that the turbulence in the bottom picture, which is the Lazarian business, the turbulence there is in the inflow, and that turbulence would be driven by some ambient forcing function. So, for example, if you wanted to apply this process in an accretion disk or something, you would have the some shearing into the... Right. But in this picture, what I sort of want to emphasize is that this kind of picture of reconnection, I think, is really what's going on. I mean, you have to find a scale to study this sort of kind of reconnection. You know, there's this, the picture of the large-scale magnetic field reconnecting like this may just be a picture which you have to take a magnifying glass to actually find little tiny regions which have behavior more like this. And so it's the scale. It's when you get down to scales like this, where the inflow can be approximated as being laminar, that the issues of particle acceleration, etc., become where the physics of the particle acceleration is occurring. So, in other words, if I want to discuss how reconnection dissipates into particles, I may not be able to say anything about this stuff going on in this MHD scale and this kind of effect of reconnection in the inflow. I may have to take a magnifying glass and go down to a scale where the effective inflow isn't really MHD turbulent, but you're generating small scales on the resistive scales from microphysical resistivity. And in that case, I think, so for example, one of the ways of, I mean, you can have this inflow, if it's sort of being laminar, you can generate perhaps turbulence in the outflow just because if there's a slight difference in the angle of the inflow and outflow, you can get shear. The velocity across this jump condition across here could be a little bit larger or slower than the one coming from this side, and you could have shear, and the shear could drive turbulence in the outflow, and actually the field would amplify again you from the turbulence stretching. But so a plausible, and this picture has also been used to explain by Fermi acceleration, stochastic Fermi acceleration, acceleration that's going on in the outflow region. To sort of put this inverse Y picture back up again, one possibility, inflow, dissipation, outflow could be somehow turbulent. That itself is one of the mechanisms which might accelerate particles in this reconnection site.
Does it matter what the plasma beta is?
Yeah. So there's a number of issues. The plasma beta is assumed to be low, and then usually in these systems it's about 0.1. So in the silicides it's about 0.1. So that also has effect on the role of these shocks themselves, which can accelerate. These shocks are compressive, and for low beta plasmas, they're quite compressive, 2.5 to 4. But so you can get acceleration across these shocks just because they're compressive. Perhaps I can talk about that in a moment. And the outflows here can be turbulent. And also they can generate a fast outflow shock if the speed here is faster.
I think I just, I was part of this problem too many good times. talk.
I should stop you.
I wonder how much more you have.
Oh, okay. I should just probably wind up very shortly.
Let me suggest the following. Why don't you flash your conclusions?
Okay. All right.
And then there are many, so to speak, loose ends here, I must say. It's extremely interesting.
Sure, okay, sure. Let's
see. I've learned a lot. We might want to do this either in this room among people over here or over lunch.
Sure. So let me just say, okay. Sort of two things, I guess I would say that, what needs to be done, I think this region, this sort of picture of reconnection with the sort of Petrick, the big picture of the sort of slow shocks, I think is sort of, I think it's perhaps fairly ubiquitous. And things like the inflow boundary conditions, what angle the inflow makes to this region can determine to some extent whether the outflow region produces fast shocks, therefore whether you get electron acceleration here, for example. In some cases you might not. The beta determines the compression across these slow shocks, which may determine the kind of particle acceleration you get. And so the reconnection is really, I think of it as an environment in which there's a number of different particle acceleration processes going on. And within this basic sort of framework, it seems there's a large variety. So if you believe that the rate, fast rate, which is generic, is more or less the result of something like Petrick reconnection, then sort of the secondary thing is to ask what kind of processes, acceleration processes, are going on within that overall framework. Slow shock studies, these shocks are not the typical fast shocks in these reconnections, they're slow shocks. And there's been much less work on slow shock studies and particle acceleration. For example, Alphane waves move slower than the slow speed, it moves faster than the slow speed, so some of the Alphane scattering waves might just leave the region of the shock before they can have a chance to do the kind of scattering that they would do at a fast shock. And produce first order acceleration, et cetera. But there's been some studies of this in the geomagnetic case. Influence on things, boundary conditions, whether outflow is turbulent, fast shocks, the kind of acceleration process you get. I think, in general, one big thing is that some of these acceleration processes, I think you have to go down to the collisionless scales to really understand what kind of particle acceleration is going on. And I think collisionless plasma physics is perhaps more relevant at the forefront of high energy astrophysics these days because it's fundamental to gamma ray burst outflows, advection dominated accretion flows, etc. So I think we could learn something from the solar wind and the geomagnetic tail more so than
I wish you were right, but I would say that the first models, the chances of these relevant forces are not features.
They're not features of them, but I think the actual physics,
it
ought to be, yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. So, the culture in astrophysics is fluids, MHD, etc., but in these cases, we know that the collision time in GRBs is extremely long, we know they're collisionless, we know that in the 8F models, they're essentially collision. So more or less, that's, I guess, the message. Another thing I think is an issue here is this the importance of magnetic topology. The reconnection environment, of course, produces this change in magnetic topology, and often in things like dynamo theory, one asks for a mean field to be produced by the reconnection of small-scale loops. But in fact, if you average over a particular scale, this field is ambiguous. The mean field is degenerate since it's not defined on scales below the averaging to the field topology. So if you have dynamics which depend on the mean field, it's not clear that the topology of the small-scale field what role it actually plays. And I think that Fourier spectral energy approaches to magnetic field studies, you don't see the topology of the field, you can see the energy on particular scales. So there's some issue with the role of field topology, which plays into this reconnection business. Anyway, I should stop.
One question on the why.
Let's applaud for the introduction.
On this, there's one thing that's just when you think about the applications, we've been talking to black holes.
Yeah.
Transferring it to set the disk near black hole. How much this whole picture that you actually have inflow does depend on the fact that the flare takes place in an environment which already pre-existed and there was a gas pressure there?
No, not exactly. I mean, Well, for example, if you move the foot points, imagine a loop of magnetic field anchored in its foot points, and you start to twist these foot points, you can then generate regions so the equal partition of motion there is between the foot point motions and the strength of the field. But above that, the magnetic field can dominate, and you can generate a twist, say, in the field line, where you have the structure that can lead to a spontaneous instability, which drives the magnetic field together just by the magnetic pressure, essentially. I mean, essentially here there's an absence of magnetic pressure because the field goes to zero. So in certain field configurations, you can, if you just perturb it, you can just see that the thing is going to want to tend to merge. So there's driven reconnection, which is what you were sort of describing. We have flow, which is magnetized one way and bangs into another flow, or something is forcing that flow from directly, or you can have this kind of develop, right, which sort of spontaneously lead to this.
The picture is spontaneous.
This picture can in principle be for both, but in the case of the solar flares, it's really a spontaneous.
But that's what you're actually showing me.
I mean, I think the picture can be in this, right, but it can be for both. I mean, I think.
But not the inflow picture field that you have is that you actually have some ejection which creates a velocity field. So
you do.
You basically abuse the pressure things from the surrounding things, right?
I think it's more a question of initial conditions. In other words, if you have an initial magnetic field pressurization, which, if in the absence of pressure, would be stable, and then you come along and push it from the outside, you can develop a situation where suddenly you reconnect. If the situation finds itself there initially already, you then have this picture right away. So I think it's more a question of initial conditions. Actually, it's in the case of AGN, I worked on something where you can kind of estimate the rate that you might need to get this done in a corona, and based on the variability times that you observe, for example, there's 1,000 seconds down to 100 seconds in some objects. With Andy Fabian and Tizian Diamante, we had this rough argument that H over R was being seen there, and that H over R was of order a tenth, corresponding to, you know, again, this kind of a tenth the Alphane speed kind of reconnection that was, It's easy to apply this stuff in the AGN case because the data, we just don't really know what to say, you know. And that's, you know, this notice that I've avoided the geomagnetic tail where in fact the data is absolutely, yeah. But I am humble to that because I'm humble to that. And I would really like to understand better some of that data and what's going on there, I guess.
Can I just a general question? Worry me a little bit. You talk about driven reconnection. You use as a sort of an example of that, the solar wind crashing into the Earth's magnetosphere, and they get that reconnection. At where you go through a shock, then there's a flow, back it up against it, and the field lines go around in every circuit.
In the tail, yeah.
Right. But what happens around the side, not in the magnetos, in the magneto tail, you've got a hyperalphane flow that goes around the side because it's only very weak shock. And then you have field lines sort of rushing across each other very fast.
Shearing.
How much reconnection in practice is there in that very large area where there's this huge flow
relative to what you do with the head-on smack. The smacking head-on.
Mm-hmm.
Virtually none.
As far as we can tell, most of it occurs in the subsonic
region. In the subsonic region. So you really have to slow it down to give it a chance to change partners, basically. I think that principle is very important for thinking about accretion disk, where all flows are essentially, you know, very quickly hypersonic.
Well, the
answer. The answer point is the answer. That's right.
That's right.
So it sort of says that where you get things sort of smacked up against one another, becoming so upending at some point, is where you're in fact get all the reconnection occurring. And that's an isolated number of points on the disk.
No matter how you play the game, reconnection is a sudden time scale phenomenon.
Yes.
No matter what you do, it's still that's the tempty offense.
Yes.
So you want, that means the reconnection flows are slower than the NHD flows.
Right.
So
your rule is almost always and everywhere you can ignore it, with the exception to what determines global geometry.
And also particle accelerator. Yeah. Particle. Well, what is in the GMIR2, what is the sort of the overall summary of the kind of particle acceleration fraction of energy in electrons versus ions, say in the, you know, is it the same from event to event?
It depends a bit on where you are. If you're looking at sort of the steady reconnection that occurs for a reasonably quiet time, say at 100 degrees downstream, almost all of the energy ends up in ions.
Is it 1% in electron? 1% non-thermal?
No. In temperature, electrons have about a 60 temperature.
Okay.
And most of the energy is going to be conducted as well.
Yeah.
In the earth, when you get very fast spontaneous connection that is less directly driven, they may have more spontaneity associated with substituents.
Mm-hmm.
It's still the case that the ions get almost all the energy. You do accelerate electrons up to the order of a million volts or so. Just a very small fraction. Which is about the maximum EMF that you can anticipate across that whole system.
Okay.
And you really can't get much more than the whole potential.
But you can get larger energy in the ions than the megavolt, can't you?
No.
You've got 10 MeV particles.
It depends on a wide range. But typically, you'll see a few hundred kilovolts, but then you do it's a kind of accelerated ion.
I thought that was the argument for having explosion instability. You need that to get the 10 MeV particle.
Well, no, you need that to get the 1 MeV particle. That is, the standard electrostatic potential of the solar wind control across the magnetosphere is at most 200 kilovolts.
But there is, of course, this other way, sort of this acceleration, natural acceleration at this interface here, which is in the third dimension you have this extra field, which, and the electric field aligns itself along with the magnetic field in the third direction, and you can calculate, I mean, people have studied something called electron runaway here, which is for a certain critical electron velocity, above a certain critical electron velocity, the electrons from collisions or even from scatterings can't keep up with the electric force, and they run away. But that there's a certain fraction, there's a certain current limit from that determined by the inflow magnetic field, and that produces some fraction of high energy electrons, but, for example, not enough to explain in the solar case by two orders of magnitude or something. So, I mean, the solar case, there is approximately 50% coming out in non-thermal electrons for the compact impulsive flares. So that is perhaps going on by something like stochastic Fermi acceleration, which I know a little bit about, and also perhaps shock acceleration. So it's just interesting, anyway, that there's a difference. All right, I should.
Okay, I think we've got a break for a